Thank you for tuning in to another episode of PolitiTalk with Lane Palmer. Today on my podcast, I have Terry Ray. So Terry, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've come to have the political mindset that you do.
Oh my gosh, that's such a big question, Lane. Okay, so I am an actor and a writer, and I live in Palm Springs, California, but I was raised in Ohio, amongst all Republicans. I knew no one who wasn't a Republican. And so, it's the only thing I heard. So then when I moved to California, I was like, these Democrat people, they're not evil. They don't have horns. And then I started hearing what people were really thinking. And I'm like, I'm actually kind of seriously, very much a Democrat. And when I came out as a Democrat to my mother, it was much more depressing than when I came out as gay. So she was much more upset about me being a Democrat.
Wow.
But I'm very much a Democrat. Oh. But I did not grow up that way. I did totally, owning someone's side of the fence.
Okay, yeah. So how was that like growing up in that kind of atmosphere? Like, what things were you taught? What were you taught to believe?
I guess I just didn't know. I mean, I was very conservative. I went to a seminary to try not to be gay. And everybody at the seminary was a Republican. And so I just didn't know otherwise. I just thought that was the good Christian way to be a Republican because, you know, there's the whole abortion thing, which is like such a big thing in the church. So it's like you couldn't possibly be a Democrat if you were, if you believed in God, which I find that to be, completely wrong. So mm-hmm. At the time I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah. There's an interesting thing that's happening, I feel like, right now in public discourse, where I feel like a lot of the time, if somebody has, I guess not necessarily like a change of heart, but if somebody switches sides on a particular topic or issue and they haven't always held that, they almost get a little flack for it, right? Like, oh, you should have always been this way or that way. And like, why are you just coming to this realization now? Or why are you this way now? Have you been noticing things like that? Like, are you kind of nervous about maybe talking about how your past is so different from who you are today?
No, I've been very open about it. So again, I have this play that I wrote, and I actually have a character that's based on my political journey, because that part of it's true. A guy who grew up and went to a seminary and was, wound up voting for Reagan, but which you were decades born after that, which is depressing. But anyway, that's the way it goes. I don't feel embarrassed by it. And I think it's actually something to be admired when somebody can look at something from another side, that they were raised one way and they're open enough to go, oh, wait a minute, I didn't know this. And now that I know both sides, I feel this way about that. And I also think things are evolving. I mean, for example, gay marriage, just like people who were not for gay marriage because they thought it was such a radical thing a few decades ago are completely for it now because it's just evolved, and we've all just kind of, that awareness has risen, and people have accepted that for the most part. Mm. So I think it's a sign of intelligence that people can evolve and change on their opinions, and not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I love that. But speaking of having kind of like these political discussions or conversations, what was it like growing up for you? Was that something that was discussed pretty prevalently, or do you feel like it's discussed a lot more now? Do you like, how do you view that topic?
Well, I wasn't as into it then. I'm very political now. I watch the news a lot. And, but back then I just thought that was the right way. It was laid out in front of me. It's like everybody around me was like, have one belief. And I just thought, oh, well, that's the way it's supposed to be. And I didn't really think about it. It wasn't on my radar. I wasn't hearing the other side until I moved away from Ohio. And then I was like, now I'm hearing a different thing. So it'd be like somebody, Fox News wasn't around then, but it'd be like somebody who has just heard Fox News and nothing else. And then all of a sudden you turned on, CNN, and you go, oh, I've never heard that before. And it's interesting, you know, hopefully my mother won't hear this because I love my mother dearly, but when my mother comes to my house and she hears something other than Fox News and I can prompt a little conversation, she's like, I never heard that before. What now? What is this? And I'm like, oh yeah, well, this is what's happening. I've never heard that before. And so it's interesting.
Yeah, what is it like having those political discussions now, especially with people who knew what you were like, you know, before?
Yeah, well, you gotta, you know, with your loved ones, you can only, my brother's now, you know, my brother's a Democrat too. And so my mom is really the only one that isn't, because she was raised that way and she's true to it. But she's also very, now she's evolved and she's very pro-gay rights. And she's pro a lot of things. Like, literally, if you tell her a human story, if you can put things, take it out of the news and say, well, this is how this affects this one person and this one family. Then she'll go, oh, well, I didn't think about that. And it's interesting how she will change her mind that way. So that's why I think something like theater is important, because it's stories. It's stories that people can relate to. And when you see it, when you see an issue played out in people's lives, it's different than hearing it in a weird way on the news. Mm. And you can relate to the how that law or how that policy impacts a certain people by seeing how it plays out in their lives, which I think is valuable.
No, I think that's beautiful. And I completely agree. Obviously you are the writer, producer, actor in a show called Electricity that has been all around the country. And so what were, when you were first actually performing it, what were some of the first reactions that you received from people? Was there anything that kind of shocked you, or like anything that you remember from like your first couple of performances?
Well, you know, it's a gay story. It's about two gay guys who evolve. They go from the closet, and over a period of 4 decades, meeting at their high school reunions, they come to the point where they demand equality. And I never really thought about it being a play for straight people. And when we started doing it, gay people were like, I totally relate to this. This is my story. But then I started hearing things from straight people. It's like, I relate to this too. I relate to this journey, and I relate to different things about it. And a couple months ago, this elderly lady stood up in the theater, and she said, I want you to stop calling this a gay play. This is not a gay play. This is a play about people. I see myself in those characters. Stop calling it a gay play, which was a huge surprise to me. And a lot of, we just finished a run, and I had this in the front row, there was this elderly couple, probably close to 80. And so he was a television writer and had won an Emmy. And, you know, they both as a couple had written plays. So they were playwrights, and he was a TV writer. And this man came up to me and said, a straight guy, this is the most moving play I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, that blew me away. I'm like, I just didn't expect that. And that's because I think there's this evolution of politics and understanding of gay people and embracing gay people and seeing their journey and knowing gay people that has changed things.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow, I love all those reactions. Obviously, you performed it here in Columbus, Ohio, and I had the chance to...
And you were involved. Yes.
And I had a mess up one of the nights of the show. I forgot a prop that was really important.
I forgot.
It was like a bottle or something. It was like some alcohol. And like you needed it, but luckily you were able to improvise. You got off stage.
I got it. I went off stage and got it.
So that was terrifying. But it was my first time working on a show, so I'm gonna give myself some slack for that. But
you were adorable. You still are.
So how have things been going with you, just like personally, career wise? I know COVID has impacted everybody. How has it impacted you?
Oh, COVID was you know, for all of us, but for people who are single, and I don't know if you went through this or not, but you know, I went through maybe the first 3 to 4 months of COVID without even touching a human being. It was like, I can't do this. So I have to get a pod of people. And then once I got like a pod of friends that I could hang with and be with, that made a big difference. But then I found ways to be creative. I used Zoom. I shot several things I wrote via Zoom. And then I started doing this TV series that I wrote with classic television stars in therapy, called TV Therapy, and I, you know, therapy sessions were happening via Zoom, so I was doing that. And then you know, I really did stay very busy and creative, and I just wrote it. I wrote a new play, so I'm very excited about that. It's about Abraham Lincoln.
Ooh, are you able to disclose what it's called or like what it's about?
I can tell you a little bit. It's about, it's called The Lincoln Debate, and I don't know if you know this or not, but, you know, this is something that I always have found fascinating, but for 4 years, Abraham Lincoln slept in the same bed as another man. And it's exploring that time period.
That's super exciting. When do you hope to have it completed or staged?
Well, I'm having people read it. I have got, we just met this big time producer that is super interested in electricity from New York, and he's reading my Lincoln play right now too. So,
oh my gosh, I cannot wait. Okay, well that's awesome. I'm super excited. Well, that's amazing. So, well, I'm happy to hear that out of COVID has come a lot of just maybe not only you know, I kind of looked at myself the same way, right? Like I was lucky enough to have a roommate when I was going through COVID, but at the same time, they're very introverted, so I wasn't actually able to like physically hug them or anything. But like that's okay. But no, you're right. I think physical.
When I had a friend who was actually like in my presence, I said, "You just have to hug me for a minute because I need it."
Yeah, physical touch is uber important, and it's important for me now to go out and do things. I took so many things for granted, I feel like, in terms of just a social life. And so, yeah. So since COVID began, obviously we now have a different president in office. How have things in your mind been going with the change? Have you noticed a difference in your day-to-day life?
You mean from COVID or from different presidents?
From different presidents.
Yes. Well, I was glued to the news when Trump was president, because I couldn't stand what he was going to do to ruin the country each and every day. And I felt like there was a new low reached constantly. And so once Biden became president, I relaxed more. I was like, okay, we don't have a crazy megalomaniac in the White House. I don't have to worry as much. But of course now with this horribly insane war, I'm glued to the news again, just crying with those Ukrainian people's courage and what they're having to go through, and it makes me nuts that this is happening. But as far as I feel a million times better that Biden's office, but I also am terrified that we're going to lose midterm elections, and you know, they still think that Trump is a viable candidate for the Republican Party, and I can't fathom that. Just makes me nuts.
Yeah, I know you said that you can't fathom it, but why, if you had to reason with yourself, why do you think that is the way that it is?
I don't know why people believe that man. I don't understand it. He's proved himself to be a liar over and over and over again, and also just so self-centered. It's like he really doesn't care about anybody but himself. I think it's just plain obvious. And I don't understand how the people that he hurts the most by his policies can follow him. I think a big part of it is, sad to say, racism. And I really do think that is a part of why he's popular. And not that all Republicans are racist, absolutely not true, but I think a big part of his followers, diehard followers, is racism. Mm.
Do you think there's anything that the Democrats can do to try and improve their image to voters?
Yeah, I think we're terrible at explaining to people what's in their best interest. I don't think that we do what's for their best interest, but we never really put it in a way that people can understand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's our big flaw, and it's a huge flaw. And it's scary to think that it can all go away again. I mean, if Trump was president right now, and the way that he had, you know, tried to pull us away from NATO, what would be happening? Mm-hmm. You know, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it is very terrifying. It's interesting though. I feel like not to say anything about like age, but like I feel like people who are from your generation who I interview, they tend to have not necessarily a more, I guess, optimistic view on politics, but maybe more of just like a more relaxed view, I should say, than people from my generation. I remember when I was interviewing people before the 2020 election, you know, every Democrat, older Democrat that I talked to ensured me that Biden would win. I don't think they ever anticipated that Trump would get more votes than he did the last time, but they knew for a fact that Biden was probably going to pull this one out, and they were right. And so why is it that you think that maybe more people from your generation aren't as concerned necessarily about the future, that they're all, they kind of like have a aura around them that everything's going to be okay and work out?
I don't have that experience with my friends. We're all worried. And actually, since, you know, I live in Palm Springs, which is mostly a lot of older people in a way, older gays, it's like a huge percentage of gays here. I worry that the young people aren't interested, that they're too complacent and not voting. Because everybody I know, we vote. We know how important it is. Especially in California, we always vote. And that's why California is so liberal. But I worry that the young people don't understand that, you know, but there's wonderful examples like you and other people that, like, the environment has got to be so important. Like, the environment is plummeting off a cliff right now. And you guys are the ones who are going to be living 60, 70 more years with this environment going down. And it's like, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. I just personally, my experience to answer your question is not that people of my generation aren't worried. I think that the ones around me are.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I definitely think place has a lot to do with it too. It feels like a lot of the Midwestern older Democrats kind of have that mentality. But that's interesting to think that maybe in a more liberal state like California, you know, they're able to kind of see things before they happen and are trying to like warn people of the signs.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're all voting. We're all voting. And it makes me nuts when folks don't vote. And I know you got to get these young people to start voting right away. And, you know, like as soon as they turn 18, I don't think I've missed a single election, even midterms or even like each year since I've turned 18. I've never not voted. I think it's the most important thing we can do.
Oh, and I can. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to not vote. And I get when Trump won, a bunch of artists, we did this as our way to protest. We did this political show and a stage show in a big theater. And we all wrote original stuff. And I wrote this thing about the vote. And I actually played a literal vote. I was a vote. And then I had different people being different states. And it was like, because of Electoral College, our votes aren't even. It's like somebody in Wyoming's vote is three times more important than my vote. And I just feel like it's so not fair. It's like, if we're a democracy, everybody's vote should count the same. I just don't understand this Electoral College thing. That was before people had the ability to hear the news and choose a person for themselves. That was before, like, only thing they had was newspapers that came out, you know, with the news from the other coast once a month. You know, that's not our situation. So we don't need it. And it's not fair. It gives certain states more power, certain votes more power. And I'm just not right.
Yeah, I completely.
Why we wind up with people president who don't win the popular vote, which has happened over and over and over again.
Yeah, especially a lot in our lifetime.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just not fair for somebody who is democracy working if the person who doesn't get the most votes is still the winner. I only in the presidential election does that work that way. So it's just not right.
Mm, I agree. To go back to your point about younger people, especially people in my generation, we saw obviously after the unfortunately, the George Floyd incident, there were massive protests in the streets and everywhere in the country. It was one of the most biggest protests in the United States history. But I know that for a fact, there was a poll done. I can't remember the numbers now, But they had asked people, you know, participating in the protest, are you registered to vote? And a majority of them said no.
Yeah.
So why do you think there's that disconnect, especially with younger voters? Why do you think they don't vote?
I think it's maybe because their family didn't vote. I think if you're raised in a family where you're told that vote is important, I think there was a long period of time where people didn't feel like, minorities, that it did them any good to vote. If they lived in a state where they were the minority, they were going to lose. So they didn't. And I just think that we have to have a change of mind with that and teach people that voting is important. And as populations change, like, you know, Texas is almost in a place where it's switching. And you know, it's if you don't vote, like, look at Georgia. Georgia's changed so much. And it's important. Every single vote in Georgia is essential. Right now, we wouldn't have gotten anything done during Biden's term if those two senators from Georgia didn't get elected at the last minute. And it's every vote is vital and important. And you can make your life better by voting. Especially if you listen to what's happening. It's like, you know, like there's so many issues that the Democrats, I hate to, you know, be all I am, but, you know, all Pollyanna, but we tell you what we're for. Republicans are just against. Like, what are they actually for that's going to help you? I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it is like very like, they stick to almost like a script that they keep repeating at every rally and event. And it's like, oh,
and little, you know, Mitch McConnell, ugh. You know, when Obama became president, his only thing was, I'm going to do everything to ruin him, which meant, you know, hurting the country. Mm-hmm. Isn't that not what you're supposed to be doing? I just think Mitch McConnell is, you know, devil's little stepchild, but whatever.
Yeah. So if you had the chance to kind of sit like one-on-one with the president and his administration and let him know anything, what would you say if you were just given the floor with his administration and him?
I think I would say, let's talk about marketing, gang. Let's get the word out what you're doing and like what will happen if you don't win. And what will happen if you do win? And spell it out in simple terms. What's in these policies? How does it help people? And just, you know, sell what you've done versus there's the other side who just say no. They just say no. It's just so clear to me that, you know, I'm a Democrat.
Well, what are some policies that you would like to see enacted by the administration? Is there anything maybe that they haven't done yet that you would like to see them do?
I think, you know, all the things that they were proposing in, you know, I can't think of the bill that wouldn't pass because Joe Manchin and that gal from Arizona wouldn't go for it. But, you know, the continuing the money for children, you know, for, you know, the child credit, the education, health insurance, all those things that improve someone's life, child care for women so that they can, you know, they can afford to get a job because they don't have to pay all their money that they would be making for child care. There's so many things that would help the average person that I don't know that they're aware of because there's nothing like that the Republicans are offering. And, you know, it's just, I think it's very cut and dry, but it's not presented that way.
Mm. So this is going to sound like a pushback, but I don't mean it to sound this way. I think because there are so many people who listen to my podcast, a lot of people might rebuttal and say, well, in California, right? Like you are the pinnacle kind of what a democratic state should look like. And yet in Los Angeles, you have a lot of the homeless population, you have crime that's rising, you have unaffordable housing, and they say that it's not working. They say things aren't working there. Do you kind of see that, or how? What is your reaction to people who kind of say things like that?
Well, we have a huge homeless problem because we try to help homeless people. So if you're going to be homeless, do you want to live in Minneapolis in the winter, or do you want to live in California? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have better weather, so we have more homeless people that way. We have we do have a high cost of living because so many people want to live here. It's demand. And things are, you know, our state, our economy for California, I think I have this right, is the sixth largest economy in the world. If you separated us from the rest of the United States and the rest of the countries, we would be sixth. So we're doing something right. And our economy, if you just said California, we're in the black. We're always in the black and we're getting surplus, but we give so much to the taxes to the country. So we're supporting other states that don't do well. We're supporting Alabama and Mississippi and stuff like that. But if we just kept it all here, all the policies that are enacted here and all that money went into California, it would be amazing. But you know, I don't think it's wrong that we're giving money to other states. We're part of the United States. So, okay. Tax money is going there. But, I don't think it's our policies that are causing that. I think it's our popularity with being a place that's going to be taken care of. It's like, you know, in San Francisco, they do so much for the homeless people, and it's a little bit maybe too much, and maybe possibly, but it's we're trying. And I think that trying is the key. It's like, how do you solve homelessness? Who's got the answer to that? Poverty is awful, and homelessness is awful, but I don't think it's the policies that make it. I think that people move here and to have a better life. If you're going to be homeless, hey, go to the beach, you know, in the sun.
Yeah. No, and thank you for bringing, obviously, that up. I think a lot of people don't realize how much California does for people, you know, that need help. And obviously, it has a lot of great social programs and things like that. So, yeah, I guess now, is there anything else? Obviously, you have the floor. Is there anything else that you maybe kind of want to end on? Like, any kind of message? Like, anything that's been on your mind?
Well, you know, my message is always vote. That's why I wrote the play about voting. So if you don't vote, don't dare complain. You have to exercise your right to vote. That's what being a citizen is. That's what being part of this country is. And you must do it. It's not a big deal. It's quite easy to do. And it's not hard to learn what you're voting about. There's booklets. You just read the booklet. And don't just vote what people say, oh, vote for these people, and blindly vote down the list of whatever your party is or whatever. It's like, I look at these things. You read the pros, you read the cons. Do you guys have that in Ohio? Do they give you a booklet like that?
Yeah, I think even on the ballot itself, it'll go over things of that nature as well, at least with the electronic ones, for sure.
Yeah, it's like when you get something in the mail that goes, this is the pros for this proposition, this is mm-hmm. the cons for this proposition, and you can look at that, and you can make your own decision. I never just get a thing that says, oh, this is where you should vote and vote like that. That's you voting, but you're not using your head. Use your head. And sometimes I always do it, and then I compare. It's like, what do they say? What does the Democratic thing say for me to vote? Like, well, okay, well, I agree. I disagreed on that one. How about that? But then, I'm voting. I'm using my own brain. So I feel like, okay, I may get it wrong, but like I'm a person of at least normal intelligence, and I'm supposed to be able to do this. And so I'm giving my best judgment, and that's what I would encourage everybody to do.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you again, Terry, so much for being on. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you for being so politically aware and leading the way for your generation. So thank you.
Thank you.